to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
Well, in this two-week series on evil and suffering, we've covered a lot of ground. It was never my intention, and in fact, I don't think it's possible, to solve all of the puzzles and dilemmas raised by the pain we experience and see around us. What I do think is possible, though, is to compare the biblical perspective on suffering with the perspectives found in other philosophies, in Hinduism, Buddhism, atheism, and so on. When we do that, I think it's clear that Christianity not only has a coherent answer to the problem of pain, it offers comfort to those who are actually suffering in a way that no other philosophy can offer. Over the next two nights, I want to talk about the Bible's most precious response to the problem of evil and pain in our world. It has to do not so much with what God will do in the future, as important as that is, as we saw last night. It has to do with what God has done in the past and how he promises to bring comfort in the present. For me, the most painful effects of losing my father occurred not at the time of his plane crash when I was about 9 years of age, but years later when I was about 18. I remember at the time watching my mates becoming mates with their dads, turning that emotional corner from treating their fathers as the household policeman to somehow looking up to them as friends and wanting to confide in them. It came home to me one evening in particular. I was out on the back balcony with one of my best mates, Ben. We were just chatting about stuff, you know, sport, girls, ambitions, sport, girls. And Ben's dad, Art, was someone I already looked up to in a big way, and he came out this day with beers in his hand. Now, it wasn't the first beer Art had let Ben taste, and it certainly wasn't the first beer Ben had ever had. But this was different. This was a deliberate father-son moment, a way of saying, now we drink beer together, which in my book back then meant a lot. Now, of course, Art included me in his little ritual. I think he was always conscious of me not having a dad. But to be honest, it wasn't quite the same. Although there was a sense in which we were mates, he was not my dad, and I was not his son. The question when I was 9 was, Mum, why did God let Dad's plane crash? The questions at 18 were quite different. I'd come to accept the claims about Jesus during my high school years, and so my doubt and confusion now was that of a believer, struggling to fit together my feelings of loss and my faith. I found myself asking now, God, where are you in all this? What do you know about my pain? What do you know about experiencing loss? It was in asking these questions that I discovered, or rather had pointed out to me, the most extraordinary contribution of biblical thought to the problem of human pain. God himself has wounds. I mentioned previously that in Islamic thought, God is seen as the unmoved mover, the one who moves everything but is himself moved by nothing. This is one of the strongest points of contrast between biblical faith and that of the Quran, as any Muslim will tell you. At the heart of the Bible's presentation of God is the incredible and unapologetic affirmation that God himself suffers, that he is the deeply moved mover. Just think of the Bible's storyline for a minute. It reads like a classic tragedy. The Creator designs the world to have independent relationship with himself. And that independence is turned by us into autonomy as we neglect and reject him. He enters that world in the person of Jesus, and once again, he's rejected, mocked, and brutally executed on a cross. And yet, even still, after such a dramatic display of commitment to the world, God is rejected by men and women. As strange as it sounds, we could well ask, who has experienced misery more than the God revealed in the pages of the Bible? This dimension of God's story is nowhere more clearly demonstrated than in the crucifixion scene of the Gospel of Mark, the first biography of Christ written shortly after his life. Here, the circumstances and cry of the anguished poet who composed Psalm 22, a psalm I've talked about several times in this series, become the very circumstances and cry of Jesus himself. Let me remind you of the words of Psalm 22, and then I'll read a little bit of the crucifixion scene from Mark's Gospel. Listen out for the many connections. Here's Psalm 22. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the words of my groaning? O my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by men and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. Dogs have surrounded me. A band of evil men has encircled me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. Now let me read from Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 15, and compare these two passages. They put a purple robe on Jesus, then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" Again and again they struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. Those who passed by hurled insults at him. Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. Did you see the connections? Just as the psalm writer, centuries before Christ, had been the object of ridicule and mockery, so those who passed by Jesus hurled insults at him, and those crucified with him did the same. Just as the poet's very garments had been seized by his enemies, so the soldiers at the foot of Christ's cross divided his clothes among themselves and drew lots to see what each would get to take home. Just as the poet could state metaphorically that they have pierced my hands and my feet, so Jesus experienced real nails, the thickness of my finger, driven through his hands and feet. It seems that Mark has deliberately worded his account of Jesus' death to recall all of these lines of the ancient suffering in Psalm 22. This is not to say Mark made any of this stuff up. Gambling for the clothes of a vanquished foe, for instance, was a very common practice in the ancient world and was likely to have occurred at many public executions like that of Jesus. My point is that the first believers perceived in the events of Jesus' crucifixion an uncanny parallel with the lyrics of Psalm 22, a psalm they had sung in the synagogue services for hundreds of years. But more than that, Jesus' final cry from the cross made the connection with Psalm 22 explicit. In the final moments of his life, as blood loss began to draw away his strength and asphyxiation stole his very breath, Jesus searched for words that would convey to the large crowd of onlookers his innermost feelings. He chose the opening line of Psalm 22, and so that all could hear, he cried out, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which is Aramaic, the language of first century Palestine, for, my God, why have you forsaken me?" These words not only remind us that it's okay to cry out your questions to God when you're suffering, they also tell us that Jesus himself, God incarnate, has experienced our pain. He is not the unmoved mover. He is the deeply moved mover. He loves us so much that he entered our world of pain. There is so much more I want to say about this, and tomorrow night I'll do just that. But for now, I simply want to say this. In your pain, turn to God as he has revealed himself in Jesus. Ask your questions and realize that he knows your pain because he has experienced it firsthand.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.